Suspense. Tonight, Roma Wines bring you the distinguished actor, Mr. Ronald Colman, in one of the great suspense stories of our time, August Heat.
What? August Heat? Is one of the great suspense stories of our time? Then how come I never heard of it? Oh, 720 WGN. Good evening, I'm John Landecker, and I'm really looking forward to having this person on. Hello, Carl, how are you?
John, how are you? Great to talk to you.
Nice to talk to you, Carl Amari, ladies and gentlemen, right here on the telephone on WGN. A man who has amassed, gosh, it says here like 60,000 radio.
Well, that must be old because I have over 100,000 now, John.
100,000 old radio programs.
Yes.
And you, I understand that you digitize all of them. You sort of bring the audio up to date.
Yeah, you know, I've spent 40 years. I know you had said 20 earlier, but that was probably an old bio.
Yeah.
I've spent 40 years licensing the rights to over 100,000 shows. And we, because we work with the Burns and Allen estate, the Abbott Costello estate, and all these CBS, all these different great rights holders, we get the master recordings. And by that, it means just the like the 16-inch acetate transcription discs and things. So they still have to be digitized because you know they're on old records. So we digitize them so they sound like brilliant quality.
Yeah, I have a little bit of knowledge about how old radio started and how they use those recordings to, correct me if I'm wrong, send that show around to other parts of the country. Is that right?
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly right. Exactly right. Yep.
What got you interested in this?
Well, you just played a suspense, the opening to a suspense episode, and that was the very first show I ever heard. I was 12 years old. I was at a sleepover at a friend's house, and we were kind of rowdy, and his father had eight-track tapes. Eight-track tapes with some classic radio on them, and one of them was suspense, an episode called On a Country Road. It had Cary Grant in it, and he runs out of gas with his wife on a lonely road, raining at night, and they learn on the radio that there's a woman armed with a meat cleaver chopping people up. And I, you know, as a kid, 12 years old, I was absolutely glued to the radio, you know, listening to this 8-track tape, I should say. And I had never, you know, I had never heard anything like that. I was born in 1963, so it was 1972 that this, or 1975 that this happened. And I just was absolutely mesmerized by it. So I learned everything I possibly could about original radio shows. And then when I got out of college, I started trying to create a business out of it and licensing them.
Well, I was reading your bio, and apparently you were very successful, to say the least. That's an understatement. Yeah.
Well, you know, interestingly, like I got, you know, George Burns and I got to be very good friends over the years.
Oh,
yeah,
awesome.
I carry a picture of me and George. Next time I see you, John, I'll show you this picture.
Oh, that's great.
And I carry it in my wallet because he really helped me because he introduced me to Jerry Lewis and to, you know, Milton Berle and so many people. And he thought it was a kick that a young guy knew all this stuff about, you know, the Burns and Allen show and, and all of these radio shows. Because I literally read everything I could about it. And he just, you know, when I went to him and said, I want to license Burns and Allen from you, he thought it was great because so many people were just, you know, just airing them or selling them without permission.
Yeah.
And so he thought, wow, you know, here's a guy that wants to legitimize it and to pay royalties and, you know, do the right thing with these shows. And so I, as I say, spent a long time with the help of you know, George Burns and people like that to license all these shows.
This is an interesting topic for me because I have a fascination with old-time radio. I wasn't around when old-time radio was a big deal, but I got into it through my grandfather, William J. Records. Okay, so how do I put this? There's a group in Chicago called the SAG-AFTRA Senior Radio Players. And Roger Badish and myself have done some things with them. And what they do is take a... I've been Boston Blackie. I've been Sam. I've been Sam Spade. I've been the announcer. We did the Lone Ranger, and they said, "We'll take auditions." And I came in and I said, "Well, I don't want an audition to be the Lone Ranger. I want to be the announcer. The Lone Ranger hardly does anything. It's the
I want to be Fred Foy.
Absolutely, yeah. A cloud of dust to speed. You know, that's what I wanted to do." But they don't have the rights, apparently, to broadcast or record or anything like that. We would do a live performance on stage over at the Cultural Center and have, you know, a Foley sound effects person who would, you know, if there was somebody walking in sand, they'd have a thing of sand and put shoes in it. It wouldn't be something pre-recorded. Why is it like that? How could you have... I'm just curious how you have the rights and they don't.
Well, you know, I don't own any of these shows. I just have the rights to broadcast them, sell them,
right?
You know, all that kind of stuff, because I work with the owners in the estate, you know, the estates generally.
I see.
I'm like with George Burns, you know, it would be George Burns and Gracie Allen Estate, Abbott and Costello, same thing, these type of things. Mm-hmm. The Lone Ranger is actually owned by Golden Books now. It's been sold, you know, Golden Books, you're familiar with the, you know, they're like a family publisher.
They're right? Still around, Golden Books?
Yeah, Golden Books. And so they bought, actually at one point, Broadway Video owned them. You know, Lauren Michaels' company from Saturday Night Live.
No kidding.
And but it was a Rather corporation originally created the
yes.
Lone Ranger.
With a W.
And then,
yeah.
Yes. And that was sold, I believe, once or twice. And then Broadway Video bought it. And then Golden Books bought it. And so I kind of followed that chain all the way, you know, whoever was the new owner and licensed the rights to the radio shows. Now, I don't have any rights to, like, make a movie about it or anything like that.
Right. Because,
but I do have the rights to broadcast or sell, and, you know, those shows. And pay fees and royalties.
Disney obviously got the rights because they made a pretty bad Lone Ranger movie a few years ago, which I was super disappointed in. And ironically, I don't think there's ever been a good Lone Ranger movie. I'm not talking about Clayton Moore and Jay Silverheels and the television series. I'm talking about an actual movie. There was another one with Clinton Spilsbury or somebody.
Yes, that's exactly right.
That was so horrible, I couldn't believe it.
Terrible.
I was just don't you understand what this is about? No, you don't.
You know, John, you know, you're a man after my own heart, because when they announced that they were going to make a Lone Ranger movie with Johnny Depp and, you know, Armie Hammer. When I heard that, I was like, wow, if they would have made that movie like Unforgiven, if they would have made it gritty,
man.
And, you know, really like realistic.
Yes.
It would have been tremendous, but they went corny with it, you know?
Well, not only that, but they diminished the Lone Ranger character and made him look like an idiot, and had Johnny Depp doing some strange stuff, feeding a dead bird on his head. And
crazy.
The only thing that was a redeeming moment for me that I think the... who did the music? Hans Zimmer. Hans Zimmer's arrangement...
Hans Zimmer did the music.
Hans Zimmer's arrangement of the William Tell overture at the end is fantastic. Right. Is absolutely fantastic. But
that was a big budget, too. Big budget movie.
But that's that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then, I mean, we're getting into minutia now, but this is where I go, baby. They didn't, in the movie credits, didn't even give a credit to the people who originated the radio show.
Wow.
Yeah.
And wow.
Fran Stryker. The guy's name was Fran Stryker at WXYZ in Detroit. Mm-hmm. Not a mention in the film credits, and they're using everything that he came up with.
Yeah, that's not right.
We're talking to Carl Amari, by the way. radio historian, expert, purveyor of radio dramas and mysteries and anything else. And by the way, let's get to this right away. I mean, before we go any further, you will be returning to WGN with Halloween Radio Theater. Tell us about it.
Well, you know, Sean and Mary called me and said, hey, want to do something for Halloween? You know, that's the call you wait for. And I'm super excited because Halloween is one of my favorite times of year. So They're giving me 4 hours live. I'm going to do it from 5 p.m. to 9 p.m. this Sunday, Halloween, October 31st. Mm-hmm. And I'll be playing some really good spooky shows. So I'm super excited about it.
So, needless to say, you've listened to absolutely every one of these 100,000 shows.
No, I've listened to every one of them, but boy, I'll tell you, I've listened to a lot of them, John.
That's fantastic. Just fantastic.
Yeah,
you know, I was also reading about the Art Fleming.
Yeah.
And I said to Tom, my producer, I said, do you know who Art Fleming is? And he goes, no. I said, he's the original Jeopardy host.
Yes, he is.
And with all the news that's been around about who's hosting Jeopardy over the past couple of years, no one remembers way, way, way back when it first came out. And Art Fleming was about as animated as a pencil. I mean, if you want to, I mean, he was literally stoic, I guess that's the word I'm looking for.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
He was much more along the lines of, you know, I'm an intellectual, I know what I'm doing, as opposed to...
Yeah, he's a very intelligent man. I mean, he played it straight, on Jeopardy, definitely.
Yeah. Well, I hope that everybody tunes in, and I tell you, this is a... Let's see, when was the story I'm going to tell you, but I guess it was in the 1980s. I was with some friends here in Chicago, and it was in the evening, dark outside, and they turned out all the lights in the house and put on, I think, The Shadow something, and one of the people in the room during the listening, while we were listening to the show, unbeknownst to all of us, got down on the floor and crawled over and grabbed somebody's legs while this thing was on. And let me tell you, in the context of nighttime, all the lights are out, you're into this broadcast, people jumped. So I am suggesting, first of all, this is going to start at 5 o'clock, which is right about dusk. And I suggest that what people do is listen to this. Get the family, everybody in the house, in the living room, around the radio, or wherever your radio is, or your app, or your streaming, and turn out the lights, and then listen, because it's a whole different experience.
Boy, you're so right, John. Yeah. I mean, there's nothing like the imagination. There's nothing more powerful than, you know, the theater of the mind.
You know it.
When you turn out the lights and you just let your mind do what, you know, you just let your eyes relax.
Yes.
And let your mind do all the, you know, all the pictures in the mind. It's really amazing because these people back then that created these radio shows, they were magicians. I mean, they knew how to pique your theater of the mind.
Right.
And with the sound effects and the music and the acting. It's really magical to hear these shows.
Carl, thank you so much for being with us. I look forward to talking to you again sometime. Carl Amari.
Please have me on again soon, John.
Yep.
Love your show.
Thank you.
I'm a big fan of yours. It's an honor to be on your show.
Thank you. And I'm going to remind everybody to tune in Sunday from 5 to 9 p.m. Mystery in the Air with Peter Lorre. Mystery House with Bela Lugosi and John Carradine. Episodes of The Whistler, episodes of Lights Out, The Inner Sanctum, all here at 720 WGN.